Community Matters, solutions to local issues and leaders who are making a positive difference.
Hey, it's Megan from your encouraging WPER morning show. Very excited to be with you for another Community Matters. We are really excited about this particular interview, just for the content that it covers. It's not something that I think we've covered very often on this program, and it's a big one. We're talking about eating disorders and treatment for that today. So without further ado, here is the interview. We're talking this morning with Christy Dondero-Betwe with Rock Recovery. I'm very excited to talk to you because this is an issue I feel like we definitely need to raise more awareness for. So Christy, welcome to the show. We're excited to have you.
Thanks, Megan. So glad to be here.
So I understand, okay, Rock Recovery. The first time I've ever heard of it was just this past week. So I'm really excited to know more. What is Rock Recovery? Could you tell me a little bit about it?
Sure. So Rock Recovery is a nonprofit. We're based in the Washington, D.C. area in Arlington, Virginia. And our whole mission is to support the journey to freedom from disordered eating. So we help people overcome eating disorders, disordered eating, body image issues, and kind of anything in between. And we offer affordable outpatient recovery programs and then community empowerment and education programs to help raise awareness about mental illness and eating disorders specifically.
And who do you serve? Is there a specific age group, a specific eating disorder that you're serving, or is it just pretty open?
Good question. So we do try to keep our doors open to all. And then, of course, it's also good to have the things you specialize in. So we offer clinical programs that are led by therapists and trained clinicians that are for people who are 18 and up. And those are limited by state licensure. So those programs are for people in Virginia, D.C., Maryland, and California. And then we offer faith support programs that are for people really 15 and up that are often led by lay people like myself who are recovered but don't have the fancy letters behind their name and are trained people who are alumni or who are recovered from an eating disorder. And those programs are curriculum-based and support group-based and open more to the teen population and above. And then our community education, you know, this is something that affects people everywhere, and often it's an illness that is not often talked about. So we also do education programs for churches, schools, universities, organizations, corporations. So really, we educate the community at large because we know this touches so many people. And unfortunately, stigma and shame keep people silent. So those programs are really for the community at large.
Now, you mentioned that you're a layperson. What specifically is your role within Rock Recovery?
So I am the executive director. It's been a joy. I've been with the organization for 8 years. I was our first paid employee, and now we're a staff of four. So we are growing, which is super exciting. And I am recovered from an eating disorder. I've been recovered now for almost 15 years. So it's been quite a long time. After struggling for about 10 years with an eating disorder, I've now been free for almost 15, which is a joy. And so that's why I do this work.
I think that's incredible, especially just to have someone in the program who has been in the shoes of where the participants are. That's got to make a difference, right?
Absolutely. You know, and everyone's story is different. Everyone's recovery journey is different. And yet I say I have street cred. I don't have the fancy letters like our lovely clinicians behind my name, but I've got a story. I've got some street cred. I've been there. I've got the t-shirt. You know, I've been there. I've got the t-shirt. So there's something to that for sure. Yeah.
Perfect. How did Rock Recovery get its start? I mean, you said that you're a staff of four. So, I mean, how long has Rock Recovery been around?
So we just turned 12, actually, and we have our incredible founder, Dr. Carolyn Larson, founded Rock Recovery 12 years ago with a committed group of 12 other women. She had a story where she too recovered from an eating disorder, and she really struggled to get treatment. And Rock Recovery really exists to bridge gaps in treatment for people, either who can't afford it or who can't access the level of care that they need. And her story is a pretty common one where she was sort of, quote unquote, too sick for some programs, but not, quote unquote, sick enough for others. And so she said, hey, I'm struggling, I need help, but she couldn't find anyone who would help her. And so eventually she found a facility who would take her. She went through the process, she really recovered, and she came back to DC and said, well, what are these people doing who are like me, who are falling through the cracks? And so one of her friends brought her a book, How to Start a Nonprofit for Dummies, and she took that as her sign from God to go ahead and you know, take the steps and create something for these people who are like her, who need this program. And so here we are 12 years later. And so I always joke that Carrie, you know, birthed the organization and I got to adopt it 8 years ago. And we work together very closely. She's lovely. So yeah, it's been great.
Fantastic. Now, you said that Rock Recovery bridges the gaps. So I guess you talked a little bit about how she was unable to find something that fit her specific need because she wasn't, you know, too far into one category, not enough into this category. So Is that what you mean by bridging the gaps? You're sort of closing loopholes, I guess, or what specifically does that mean?
Yeah, so we're helping to bridge gaps for people. So for people who need really significant treatment, more intensive treatment, like an intensive program or residential program, you know, you go and you live at this place for a month or 2 months or however long, often insurance kicks out a little sooner than someone's actually truly ready to come home. So people often are making progress, but then kind of sent home and don't have a lot of support at home. So our programs really help people who are living at home, either working or going to school full or part-time, get the treatment and help that they need while still living their daily lives. Because it's hard, you know, oftentimes when you're living at home, you're seeing a therapist or a dietitian once a week or twice a week maybe, but you don't have that group environment. So the majority of our programs are all done in group settings because there's that beauty of the shoulder to shoulder. We call it the gift of I get it when someone else, you know, in the room or right now, someone else on the Zoom call says, you know, oh, me too, or I get that, or yeah, like there's just this power of the collective whole that you realize, oh, I'm not alone. Other people do get it, right? So there's just that power of the group setting that we're able to provide people that really doesn't exist very often for people outside of programs that recovery provides.
In terms of someone seeking out treatment, would you say some of the obstacles to that, do they lean more towards not being able to find it? Or do you think that there's something more to be said for people who just either don't feel they need it or feel, I don't know, like the shame factor in not wanting to seek out treatment because they feel like there's this stigma on that?
Well, I think two of the biggest initial barriers are cost and accessibility. So again, that's why we really offer all of our programs at sliding scale. We don't deal with insurance because insurance often has not really helpful thresholds for covering disordered eating or mental illness. So we do everything sort of sliding scale, and we are able to offer that because we're a nonprofit. And so cost is something that keeps people from getting the help that they need, as well as programs they can actually access. But then absolutely ambivalence, you know, it's hard to want to get better, and it's hard to want to give up this thing that's helped someone maybe cope or feel in control or to sort of get through life. So there's often this sort of like, well, how am I going to give this up and still kind of handle life? Because life is really hard. And then there's also this shame, you know, oh, I shouldn't be struggling with this. What's wrong with me? Why can't I just eat more, eat less, whatever the thing is? People often feel a lot of shame and isolation. And there's still a lot of misunderstanding out there that people think an eating disorder is a choice. And it is not a choice. It is not a vanity issue. It is truly a mental illness. And this is truly something we know. There's a lot of genetic components to it. There's environmental factors that make eating disorders develop. But there's just a lot of things going on that are at play, and a lot of misunderstanding about this is not a choice. This is not a vanity. This is truly something that people need treatment and help for.
I think you pointed out a very important thing there. There is a stereotypical view, at least even the one that I grew up with. I mean, I'm 40, but you know, growing up with the idea of what an eating disorder is, it was always the starvation or the binge and purge. And so that's not just what an eating disorder is, right? I mean, you said, do I need to eat more, eat less? Like this, there's a wide range of how this affects people.
Absolutely. And that's why we often use the term disordered eating, because it kind of encapsulates more than just the typical thing you think about, anorexia or bulimia. And actually, to your point earlier, binge eating disorder is a newer diagnosable category of an eating disorder, but it's actually the most common eating disorder. But people often, you know, in our culture, we have sort of fat phobic culture, I would say, and we have a diet culture we talk about a lot where thinness is really prized and idealized, even if people's bodies are not all created the same way. Not everyone was given a thin body or this, you know, these kinds of things that media or otherwise tell us is right. So there definitely is a lot of people struggling. There are a lot of people struggling with binge eating disorder, which is basically sort of loss of control eating large quantities of food in a short period of time without any compensatory behavior like maybe purging or exercising or things like that. But that's definitely, like I said, the most common eating disorder. And yeah, I mean, we often think, oh, it's these young teenage girls that are really thin. You think of a sort of stereotype, and that's just not true. People in all shapes and sizes can have an eating disorder of all genders, all ages, all backgrounds, all ethnic, you know, backgrounds as well. It's not just something that only teenage white women get. This is something that affects really all people. It's just often underdiagnosed and not talked about.
I think that's great. You answered another question that I was thinking about asking, which is just who does this affect most? But you're saying really there is no like, there is no character profile of someone who fits the eating disorder picture. So then with Rock Recovery, I know that you said that you really try to keep it open. Forgive me if you've already mentioned it, but does that include minors? So when you're talking about teenage girls, are you working with them as well, even if they're under the age of 18?
So we are working with them, just not with our clinical programs currently. Mm-hmm. We would love to start a clinical program for teens one day, but again, staff of four, one step at a time. We've kind of had to pick our lane where we're going to really specialize. And so we do work, and we do also support families. So we have a free monthly prayer support group that we offer to families and loved ones of people with eating disorders, because often with teens, supporting the family is a huge part of getting that child better. Mm-hmm. And then we're able to refer out to our partners in the community as well with teens and adolescents. But we do offer support groups for teens as well. So for people who are 15 and up, we're able to provide support groups for those people, just not the clinical treatment side quite yet.
What would you say is one of the keys to Rock Recovery's success? I know that you mentioned the shoulder-to-shoulder type thing and, you know, the I get it, those Me Too moments. So is that all a part of it, or are there other things that you do that you think are really special to the services that you offer?
I always joke, I pity the person on a plane who asked me what I do for a living, because I think there's so many special things about Rock Recovery. I love this organization. And so, yeah, absolutely. You know, the community, our people are our product, and we just have the best people. We have the most amazing staff and clinicians who work with us. We have the greatest clients in the whole wide world. I mean, I love the people we get to serve. But really, one of the differences about Rock Recovery is that we also integrate faith and spirituality. So our clinical programs, you know, we're open to all. Our doors are open to all. And we know that the power of faith is critical in the recovery process. And for people of faith who want to integrate faith into their recovery, it's often hard to find a place that does that well. You know, there's often a lot of shame, or people who are like, oh, just pray more, do this, right? And we're like, yes, pray more, but also maybe take some medication and go see a therapist and do these other things too. So we really have this both and approach, which is really bridging faith and spirituality and just this good evidence-based treatment model that gets people well. And so we invite people to show up as their whole selves. We don't ask anyone to be perfect. We meet people where they're at. But there is this sort of approach that I think is really unique that we get to bring and help people and invite them to come up as their whole selves.
What is the recovery journey like? I mean, you are someone who, you know, you self-proclaimed, you are recovered. What is that journey like? Are we talking like a lifetime thing? Like it's something that you're constantly dealing with, even I don't really know the best way to put that. Or is it something that you find people truly can put it behind them with the right supports in place?
Yeah, so we would really say that complete freedom and recovery is possible, which is hard to hear for our clients. Sometimes people get real angry at me when I tell them that sometimes, because if you've been struggling with this for years or decades, it's hard to imagine any other way. Mm. And the difference of what we'd say with disordered eating, eating disorder than other, you know, addiction things where you say, you know, I'm always recovering from this substance or that thing, is that you have to eat every day, right? This isn't something you can just sort of quote unquote be clean from or abstinent from. Like food's a part of life, breaking bread. It's a huge part of our community, and our life is sort of showing up around the table together. And so with an eating disorder too, we would really say that complete freedom is possible. The journey is messy and complicated. There's a lot of surrender and sort of letting go of control and trying a different way. That's a part of the journey. A lot of baby steps, a lot of ups and downs, you know, all the kind of usual things that I think do happen in a recovery journey, no matter what the substance or process might be for somebody. But we really do believe that complete freedom is possible. And as someone who's been recovered now for almost 15 years, I can say that it is possible. It's really finding a new identity. And for me, I came to faith through my own recovery journey. And so that's where God really met me and totally tore down my old false identity and sort of built up the new one that is firm in this new foundation. And so we really do encourage people to believe that it's possible. It's messy. We can't promise, you know, in 1 year or 2 years or whatever, it'll be possible for everyone. But we think it's just kind of one day at a time, one step at a time, and just keep working for that freedom.
For people who are seeking out the services of Rock Recovery, are these people who are going through treatment, or are you all, or like seeking treatment for themselves, or are you also hearing from family members who are saying, I think someone in my family may be struggling with this, how can I find help for them?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of both and approach for that. So we do offer, like I mentioned, a free monthly parent support group for loved ones of people with eating disorders. We try to help really equip the loved ones, because oftentimes, you know, you'll go to your loved one first and say, hey, I'm kind of worried about you. I'm seeing these patterns and behaviors, and I wonder if we should call somebody, or maybe we need to go see a therapist or talk to our pastor. Or what can we do, right? So there's definitely, the loved ones have a huge role in the recovery journey, and the person has to want to get better and be willing to take the steps. And there is a lot of ambivalence, like I mentioned before, that kind of keeps people from taking the steps, which is why support is so helpful from loved ones. But we do offer support for loved ones. And then we also, of course, when people apply to our clinical recovery programs or our support programs, it's typically the person themselves reaching out. Sometimes with our teen clients, that the family will reach out on their behalf. But we really do encourage people to take the steps for themselves. And then we sort of support people along the way, depending on where they're at.
And you mentioned patterns and behaviors that, you know, family members may be seeing. So I have this image of like moms maybe looking at their teens and thinking, well, do they? Is this an abnormal behavior? So what are some of those patterns and behaviors that could kind of be a red flag?
Yeah, there's a lot of them, and especially right now with COVID, right? I mean, so much of our lives have changed. There's a lot more isolation, and I think oftentimes change is a huge trigger for people developing disordered eating, because food is one thing we really can control in life over, you know, here in America. It's not something, it's one of the few things we have control over. And so some signs to look for are really just changes or behaviors around food, you know, labeling food as good or bad, sort of saying, I'm going to cut this thing out from my diet. Maybe hiding food or seeing food going missing is something that you can kind of see. Maybe there's some binging behavior going on. Of course, people going to the bathroom right after eating is a big sign for bulimia, because they might be purging. And then just really noticing mood shifts, different changes in personality. Of course, with teens, you're like, please, if all teenage years are, right, is mood shifts and changes in personality sometimes. But sort of different things and really different behaviors around food. Preoccupation with food is something to look for. And then, of course, weight shifts and weight changes. Like I mentioned, you know, anyone in any size and shape body can have an eating disorder. And yet, if you notice dramatic shifts in weight, that can be an indicator that something's going on as well.
So would you say it's a fair statement that noticing an abnormal behavior may not be an indication of an eating disorder, but it certainly is a good opportunity to open a conversation either with that person or even with a doctor?
Absolutely, yes. So it's good to be aware, and it's good to sort of have your finger on the pulse of these things, and you don't know what you don't know. So there could be other reasons for some shifts and some changes, right? But definitely an awareness is helpful, and an open dialogue and conversation. And one thing we really encourage parents about is having their own relationship with food, really thinking about how they handle food. You know, if parents diet, that's a huge indicator of kids developing disordered eating patterns and inappropriate dieting patterns, because it's sort of a learned behavior. So having a moral neutrality around food, not calling food good or bad, not sort of labeling things as good or bad, is a huge part of developing a healthy relationship around food in the home. And those sorts of things can just be sort of more preventative than anything.
So getting back to Rock Recovery, just for a moment here, how do you find your funding? I mean, especially as you said, you're 12 years old, you're a staff of four. How are you surviving? How do you get by?
Oh, so many things. Prayer and just really generous donors and some, I mean, lots of things, you know, lots of feelings over here, but really generous people, because our clients, the majority of them are on sliding scale for our services. And so really our client payments cover about 15% of our operations. And so really it's generous people that come in and fill the gap for us. So either individuals who are passionate about the work and serve as monthly donors or one-time donors. We have some church partners and church supporters, businesses that give to us a little bit of grant funding. We're working on that. There's not a lot of funding for mental health, unfortunately, and eating disorders in the foundation world. So we're working on some of that, but really just generous people who are passionate about this cause and want to help fill the gap for people and help other people find freedom and recover.
Is there like an average number of participants in Rock Recovery or people that you're working with at any given time, or does it really kind of fluctuate?
It fluctuates and it has grown. We've always, you know, we had a waiting list for the first 10 years of our program, and we doubled our clinical services the last couple of years. So we're now serving over 50 clients every week with our clinical services and program, and then about another 50 with our faith support program. So about 100 clients a week are able to come come to our virtual doors right now, and we're doing everything virtually right now. And that has been just incredible, because a few years ago, we were serving about 20 clients a week. So it's been amazing to see this growth, and virtual services for us since COVID hit has opened up a lot, helped people. You know, we've got a mom who goes and locks herself in her closet because she's got four kids and she couldn't drive to our office, but she can go sit in her closet for an hour and do some therapy with us. So it's been really fun to kind of bridge those gaps too with access and helping people come to programs that they couldn't maybe get there before. It's just been neat.
I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah, I'm sure the pandemic definitely impacted how you provided services. So now that you've been able to kind of open up the virtual doors, do you think that that is something that you will continue to offer, like for that mom in the closet, like you talked about? So even when we can get together and that's open, would you still provide this for those who need it?
Yes, we will. So we actually just sent a survey to our clients last month, and I think about 2/3 of them wanted virtual services forever, even, you know, regardless of safety or feeling things with COVID. They find us to be easier. They find it to be really helpful. We do meal support, so group programs, group therapy for body image issues, and just sort of different group therapy elements. And people find, you know, in person in a lot of ways has a different level of connection, but virtual services are really pretty amazing. And sometimes driving an hour in traffic, like no one's in a good mood when they get to therapy after that. So I think it's been really neat to help people with those accesses. So we're hoping that we will return to some in-person programs this summer at some point and then continue to kind of open those. But I think virtual programs are here to stay. And that's been such a level of redemption of this last year. We were about to launch a 5-year vision plan on our birthday last year on March 20th, you know, a week or whatever after things shut down for COVID. And that whole plan has really changed. I think it's really, which talk about, you know, I'm recovered, but like, oh, I still struggle with control issues and not wanting to change. And I'll tell you, that was real hard for me to kind of get over that. But we realized, wow, this is really going to help open up our reach to so many more people. And so I'm grateful. I can finally say now that I'm grateful for the changes that we've had to pivot and all these virtual things, because it will be here to stay for Rock Recovery. And I think it'll help us reach a lot more people.
Amazing. And you kind of touched on it a little bit, because that was something I was going to ask you, is future growth opportunities for Rock Recovery. You mentioned the 5-year plan kind of shifting significantly. So now what are you looking at in terms of growth wise? What are some things that you want to grow into and offer more of?
It's been such an exciting season these last few months, because we've been able to really dream and think about what is next for us. So our eventual vision and goal is to be in every state nationwide with in-person programming and virtual programming. That's really the dream, because we know this affects people everywhere. And our work is so unique that, you know, when we meet people, when we used to go to conferences and we'd meet people, they'd say, wow, I wish you were in my city, because I'd send you 3 people tomorrow. Like, I know exactly who I could send to you. This is an amazing program. And all the clinicians that we work with really, I think, would benefit from having us really everywhere. So the goal is to be nationwide. And even with our virtual program now, you know, we have missionaries in countries all over the world coming from Japan and different places who are able to come to our programs. I don't even know what time it is. I'm like, people are up at like 4 a.m. for these programs, but good for you. So, you know, the goal is just to help bridge these gaps and keep reaching people. I want to say nationally, but I know some of my mentors would say globally to try to make me be more ambitious. So maybe globally one day, who knows? We'll see. But that's really the goal, is just to kind of keep reaching more people with this message and helping more people find freedom, because we really think it's possible and it's totally worth it. You know, I always say recovery was hard. There were many tears over muffins and all kinds of things in my recovery journey. But yet, you know, it's just, freedom is an amazing gift, and I'm so grateful for it and excited to help more people really find that freedom.
That's so cool. And I do, I mean, just with us being a Christian radio station, I do love how you weave faith into the treatment. And I think that that's, you know, it's huge for a lot of people, because you're right, it does really impact kind of how you respond to something like this.
And I feel like for people, you know, for Christians and people in the faith community, so often we feel, a lot of our clients, you know, when we ask them, hey, what does God say when you pray about this? They're like, oh, I've never prayed to God about my eating disorder. Oh. And it's just wild, because there's just this shame that keeps people from even coming from God. And one of my favorite client stories recently, from someone who came from one of our faith support programs, you know, she mentioned, you know, my mom has an eating disorder, my grandma has an eating disorder. And they both just always told me, this is how it's going to always be. And you have to go to God and repent every day. And this is a sort of what your life is going to be. And when we told her, you know, it's not a sin to be sick. It's okay. Like, God wants to help you. He wants to hear from you, and you're able to pray about this. she said it made all the difference. She said in the 6 weeks she was with us, she made more progress in the 6 years of treatment because she was finally able to go to God and ask him for help and not just ask him for forgiveness. And that's the thing about integrating faith and good treatment together is like, yes, we should repent. Yes, there's a lot of things we need to go to God for and ask for forgiveness. And yet, you know, it's not a sin to be sick. And we really, God cares about us. He wants us to cast our cares and anxiety on him. And if people aren't feeling the freedom to engage God in the recovery process, they're missing the whole place where freedom comes from, right? And so it's just been so powerful to help people really integrate and heal in that way.
That's so powerful. What are some ways that the community can get involved in what you do?
Yeah, so there's lots of great ways. So we, because things are virtual right now, we always have volunteer opportunities for people to get involved as well. We have mentor roles. So if someone is recovered from an eating disorder, they can mentor one of our current clients, which is such a great way for people to get support. Of course, we always need donations and funding. So making a one-time gift, becoming a monthly bridge builder is what we call our monthly giving program, is a great way to get involved. Or attending an event, you know, either in person one day or virtual programs and events that we have all on our website and all those things on our calendar on our website. And then, of course, if you or someone you love is struggling, check out our programs. We do offer great things to people who live in Virginia. And so either clinical or community programs would be available to you. And we would love to help serve more of the community in that way, too.
And for those who are interested in finding out more and connecting with you, what are the different ways that they can reach out to you?
Well, we always joke the Holy Spirit and the internet are really our two magic weapons right now.
So that's perfect.
I know, truly, truly. Whenever we ask people how they find us, you know, our clients, they're like, I think Google and the Holy Spirit. And we're like, yeah, probably. That's probably what happened here. So our website, of course, is a great place to start, which is just www.rockrecoveryed.org. And then we are on social media. We have some great staff that handle our social media who are not me, so that's exciting. So we're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and we're Rock Recovery, and then Rock Recovery ED on Facebook, I believe. So check us out there. And then, yeah, just really the Holy Spirit and the internet should probably get people to the right place. So that sounds good.
Definitely. Well, Christy, we are out of time for today, but I really do appreciate you sharing your heart behind this, hearing your personal connection, your story, and just knowing the good work that Rock Recovery is doing. So I'm really excited to be able to share this with our listeners.
Thank you. It was such a joy to be with you today. I'm so grateful.
And thank you, our audience, for joining us on Your Encouraging WPER. Don't forget, you can always check out this interview and all of our interviews for Community Matters right on our website, WPER.org. Have a great day.